Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 320 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. We've been out for a while, but we're back, right? We're back. We're highly backed up as well. We're very constipated, so we've both taken a laxative, both me and Jason, and he's going to give us the rundown of what's going to be coming out of our butts.
Yeah, this will be a regular show, if you will. And we are back-to-back, like with the weapon, too. And we have reviews for Wonder Woman, the number one film in the world, causing a sensation with everybody who's seen it. Is it as good as they say? We'll give you our take on that. As well as Baywatch, Alien Covenant, The Great Wall, Triple X, Chips, Rings, and a slew of other things. Our thoughts on the trailers for American Made, that's the new Tom Cruise film, not The Mummy, and Lucky Logan, or Logan Lucky, I should say.
Logan strangely Lucky. Titled.
As a Steven Soderbergh returning after his short-lived hiatus from filmmaking. Shorter lived than our hiatus from podcasting. A lot of this to go over tonight, so stay with us. We have a hell of a show for you guys. But first, let's do some trivia. It's been a while. We're back with superhero trivia. First of all, I found this very interesting. Did you know that Marvel and DC jointly have copyrighted the term superhero? Did you know that? So if you like write a comic book or a graphic novel, as they're mostly called now, and you wanted to say, hey, this is our superhero, you actually can't use the term superhero. So I think I already owe them like 25 cents just by saying it twice.
So it's like trademarked by them? That's interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. Very, very interesting. I thought that was interesting there because they're competitors, but yet they've decided that they have coined that phrase together. I'm sure we're going to get a bunch of people correcting me on how ignorant that statement was and how off base I am.
Exactly. But what about supervillain? Is that up for grabs?
We should get in on this. I mean, you think we can
trademark the hell out of that right now?
Get Shirley pay the man. Can we? That's mine. Let's talk about superheroes. And in the form of Christopher Reeves, the Superman movies, the original four, of which, let's be honest, one of them is good. Maybe two of them is good.
Yeah, I'd say the first and second are like the ones that everyone thinks about, right? And the third and fourth are kind of
subpar.
Trash.
I always had a soft spot for the fourth one for two reasons. One was I was the only Superman movie I saw in theaters as a kid. My parents took me to see it. Two, it was the canon production. So you knew it was shoddy from the get-go. You know, you're like, oh, this is the kind of cheap one. How fun that the little guys could buy the end of this. That would be like Millennium Films or Lionsgate taking over Spider-Man right now and just getting a shit Spider-Man out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk, though, about the trivia, and that is which former daytime talk show host was cast at the 11th hour to replace Christopher Reeves, when he threatened to leave Superman in part three? He didn't want to come back, and he finally did come back at the last moment and sign the contract, but they had cast this actor, this former daytime talk show host, in the role, and they were going to move forward.
I don't know. Maury Povich.
It's not Chevy Chase, I'll tell you that.
I have no idea who it is.
You would never guess this because I read this and then I had to make sure.
Does it at least look like it would be Superman?
I mean, kind of. Are you ready for this? Tony Danza.
Yeah, that'd be real. That would be real bad.
I mean, talk about making Dean Cain look good in the role. Tony Danza, is he of limited acting range?
I don't even know what that would be like. Yeah, that'd be real bad.
I mean, I like Tony Danza. He's pretty much the male equivalent of Ellen DeGeneres in a lot of ways. He's very
Nice enough guy, and he's funny affable when he needs to be and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I'm not saying anything but him as Superman. I don't know. He's like, his delivery certainly would be way off.
Yeah, it'd be a stretch on that one. Although I would like to see Tony Danza come back in like a Quentin Tarantino type role. A career-defining role, you know?
And that could work because it would be so different. So something like that would work. But I think Superman would be too close to him. He'd want to play it just straight, and it wouldn't work.
Yeah, it was just – I read that, and I thought, that can't be right. And apparently that's taken from the DVD commentary on the Superman 3 disc by the producers and the director. So once again, you can correct me at the website or on Facebook, which I'm sure you all will do. And that is adapted, not adaptation. I was corrected many, many times from our last podcast over a month ago.
Adaptation.
Thank you. Yeah, I still never get it. Roads.
We don't know what's going on. All right.
We don't need Rhodes. We're going. Okay, speaking of superheroes, we lost Adam West yesterday.
Yeah, how unfortunate, right? Such a fun, weird guy.
Yeah, just such an eccentric character.
Yeah.
And really embodied. I know people are saying he's my Batman and this and that, but I don't want to say I grew up watching that, but I did. Before the Batman movies were released, people have to remember that the only Batman we had up until I was age 10 were those funky reruns on, once again, that channel I was about, the Coffee Channel here in the Bay Area, which was the local rerun channel. And that was it. So he was Batman for a long time. And his weird persona fit that so well for that 1960s.
Silly the whole show was. Yeah, he fits as far as like headlining a show like that. Yeah, he's perfect, right?
And on the heels of that, you know, we had just lost Roger Moore. So we lost James Bond and Batman in the same year. And both these actors were very comfortable. You know, first of all, they were iconics. They're icons and they were iconic roles. But they were also very self-deprecating in their public persona. And they knew that they were kind of lampooned. And they were in on the joke. They were never, you know, I don't feel like they were ever being laughed
at. Adam West really did have a very comedic, you know, outlook. Look at all the stuff that he's been in. I mean, he has that kind of voice, you know, that's just, it's funny. Like I said to you, he's like everyone's funny grandpa, you know, and he kind of was there at the end, you know, just kind of the way he speaks and everything. And he did a lot of voice acting, obviously, as well, because of that. Mm-hmm.
I had just rewatched, you know, I do Burt Reynolds Sundays around here. In this household, we watch Burt Reynolds movies on Sundays. God damn it. That's our church. And I watched Hooper last week, and Adam West is in Hooper. You know, he's playing the James Bond type character that Burt Reynolds' stuntman character is doubling for. And in that, you know, he's playing a larger than life version of himself, and he goes by his real name, you know, and you look at that, and it's just, that film was taken in 1978. And even then, he's 12 years removed from playing Batman. You know, the movie itself is, what, 30-something years old now, almost 40 years old. And it's amazing that he had such a long career after that short stint of playing Batman. But that was such a mediocre, you know, role, but an acting job. He's not a great actor. Can we agree on that? It's not like either of these guys were great actors, Moore or West, but for what they did, they did it damn well.
Yeah, I mean, Adam West. You get Adam West because you want Adam West, right?
Yeah, and you get a Roger Moore because you want a James Bond type.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's the best part about that.
Right, yeah.
And let's move on, though. Let's talk about reviews. And reviews here because we have a lot of them.
So many.
I don't want to jump into the Wonder Woman one first because this is going to be spoiler-filled and people are going to... I think so, because you want to talk about... I don't want to go too deep into that, but let's jump out here and talk about one that was making a lot of noise and quietly has sunk, which is quite a few on this list.
Yeah, actually, going for here?
Let's talk about the Netflix release of the Brad Pitt starring War Machine.
War Machine.
The comedy drama that is available on your home entertainment
What did you think this was before you watched it?
I thought this was going to be something in the vein of Three Kings or something like that.
Yeah, I really thought this was going to wind up being a war movie because the way I really didn't see a lot of trailers and things for it, but the trailers that I did see felt like this was a little bit more of a on the serious side. Like there was going to actually be some combat, like quite a bit of it and stuff. And like he was going to be like a general and stuff. And instead what we got was like this bureaucracy side of this, right? And a really boring view of that as well, I thought.
I felt like this was a strange mixture of something like The Big Short goes to war, you know?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I think that this movie had like a weird thing too where it didn't know if it wanted to be preachy, if it wanted to be against war, or if it wanted to be for war, or if it wanted to show you both sides and have you make up your mind. Like it couldn't figure out what the hell it was trying to say, but it was saying all of it.
that the theme there, I thought, was like, well, this whole confusion here. Everybody's confused in this, but the movie itself was confused, so it hides behind that. Yeah. I think you're right in that. I also think that this movie could have used, as much as I like Brad Pitt, and sometimes I liked what he was doing here, he was much too mannered most of the time.
I didn't
and it
like
needed somebody
the
whose
voice.
Comedic sensibility is a little bit smoother. And I mentioned to you, George Clooney would have been a smoother fit in this, I thought.
Possibly. It's just, this is one of those roles where I think you figure out why he took it, because he gets to do the voice and he gets to pretend to be this general guy, and I don't even know this guy, so I don't know if this is what, if that's what this guy sounds like, if that's what he's doing, or if he's just doing like his impersonation of a World War II general.
Yeah, it was a very, like I said, mannered performance,
but it's always on. Yeah, it's always on, always on. It's like, fuck, like, are you even a real human being? Like, you seem, it's too caricaturish for me.
I want to compare this unfavorably to another movie tonally like it, and another movie that had a great big megastar in it doing a very awkward performance that actually won me over, and that was Army of One, the Nicolas Cage, Russell Brand film about the construction worker who decides to go search for Bin Laden that came out and absolutely tanked. And Army of One with Nicolas Cage is worth your time if you saw War Machine and were disappointed in it. I think it hits the comedy and the comedic elements and the irony of what's going on in a much more interesting way, in intellectually stimulating way than War Machine. War Machine was trying way too hard and accomplished very little. Let's move on. I want to talk now about Wonder Woman, because we got to give everyone a chance to hang out with the show. And now, if you haven't seen Wonder Woman, who are you? You know what
that
I mean?
That was as far as you could get.
That was as far as
you get one movie in.
Exactly. I had to talk about it.
Then you had to come back.
What are your initial thoughts?
Been living under a rock.
And said,
I liked the movie quite a bit. I thought it was a really good, strong movie. There's really, it's innocuous in the sense that it doesn't do anything bad. It doesn't try to be preachy, which I love about it. You know, she's definitely, the focus is on her character, and they do character development with her and with everyone else really as well. But I thought the comedy worked. I thought the action worked. The writing gets a little fuzzy there at the end, and I think the ending really falls apart and failed to land for me on a lot of levels. But it was still such a good movie, such a fun ride, that I was fine with that, you know. But, you know, is this a great movie? No. You know, 3 out of 4 stars, right? I think solid movie.
I actually liked it a little bit more than you, I think. I would actually go 4 out of 4 stars for me on this, just because it exceeded my expectations in a lot of ways. Not even the least that it spent a lot of time initially on Paradise Island, which I didn't think they would get to until much later in the film, having seen the trailers. Like, I thought very little would be set there. So I liked how that developed. I liked that they used World War I, because I was getting burnt out on seeing World War II used in movies. I like how they introduced Chris Pine's character into that world. I like the subtle references to sexuality in there, when she was saying things like, you know, we understand we need you for biological purposes, but we know how to pleasure ourselves. I mean, there's a lot of wink wink shit going on in this movie too, I thought. And not the least, Gal Gadot. She has no bad angles in this movie. I mean, it is a pure joy to just simply gaze upon the screen sometimes and see her whooping ass in that costume that is very similar, those outfits on Paradise Island, everything, to the Red Sonja film from 1985 with Brigitte Nielsen. There's a lot of that Roger Corman, sword and sandal era stuff going on in this movie, I thought. But you had an interesting concept where you thought this related to The Fifth Element a little bit, huh?
Yeah, I mean, clearly this is she's basically Leeloo Dallas, right? She's this powerful being that's here to save the world and everything, and has to come to terms with and grips with the fact that humanity is evil, right? Is there's a duality of man there, you know, some good, some bad. Is it worth saving? Chris Pine is basically Bruce Willis, right? It's basically the Corbin Dallas character. He takes her from the island, right? Get her to where she needs to be to fight the evil.
A big metropolis city. You got me. I'm going with
I mean,
you.
It's
you
essentially the same movie, you know? I mean, it's not the same movie, but you see what I mean? Like, it's the same idea, same exact idea. And even when they went through and then did the whole thing where she's like trying to figure out, like, or she's realizing people are evil and all that stuff. I mean, that's a scene from Fifth Element, right?
Yeah. No,
she's
sitting in the
plane and she's watching the computer and realizing, oh God, are people like worth saving or not? You know? And I'm not saying that it's ripping it off in any way, or even that that was in the back of anyone's mind when they made the movie, but it just seems odd to me that they line up so well. And cool as well, because I thought it really worked. And that kind of stuff only works when the main character, or I guess when the character who's going through that stuff is, I don't know, a good enough actor, I guess. I mean, the facial expressions on Gal Gadot are fucking amazing on this. As I would say for Mia Jovovich for a Fifth Element. And she can, you know, project like hurt or surprise or like this and that. And there are times in this movie where Chris Pine's character kills people or does something and she'll just give him a look like, huh? Why is everyone doing this stuff? Why are people so mean to each other and doing this? And you kind of feel her kind of, before she gets to that point where it's, you know, explained to her that people are evil, she's kind of starting to feel that way along her voyage to that point.
You know, I'll say this about her performance. It's charming. It's hard. Performances, I would say, are charming. She charmed me.
And not only in the sense of, like, you know, some sexual thing. It's like you say, charming. Like, you really are like, wow, that seems like, you know, a real superhero type person, like a very innocent person.
It reminded me a lot, and this is a strange comparison, I know, because the movies are in different genres, but watching her in this role reminded me of watching Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman, where you go, it's just charming. Like, that's a movie star, you know, like she's just charming everybody in this, and there's a bit of that in the character as well, you know, so.
There's no reason not to like her.
The best DC movie so far, I would say. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, aside from the Batman movies, or the new stuff,
The new stuff, yeah.
I mean, obviously, this has to be the best one. But I think they could do better, right? The ending on this, I think, was a big flub.
They always go hugely screwed up. Yeah.
Do they? I mean, this was, first of all, the setups that they set up at the very beginning of this movie are obvious to me, right? From the get-go, right?
You know who the bad guy is. I mean, come on.
Of course you do. The minute he's introduced.
Yeah, I know.
You're like, okay.
Well, first of all,
but not only that, the Fifth Element thing as well, right? The weapon, right? I mean, that shit's obvious from the get-go.
You are going deep with this Fifth Element.
And then, well, that's, there's another aspect, right? But that's set up so, as if it's like going to be some kind of a reveal, but it's so obvious. And then they do reveal it. And then they do the other reveal of who the bad guy is. And then they do these reveals of, you know, sad reveal. I guess I'm trying not to give away the movie, but there's no, people said they cried at the end of this movie, and I thought, no way. And I'm an easy mark, you know, I'll tear up for that kind of stuff. And this movie glosses over all that at the end. It just wraps the fuck up. And I thought there was a lot of missed opportunities, and really they didn't need the bad guy stuff. It should have just been straightforward.
Well, the bad guy's not going to line up in like the great DC villain universe.
It doesn't matter. I mean, even the fight was useless, right? The fight was boring. They didn't do anything. They just like threw stuff back and forth, and then they wait, and you do this and that, and you're like,
what's
the
CGI end of a superhero movie? It's whatever.
A waste of time, you know.
But that's the only quibble I had with the movie, was that it, in the very end there, I didn't give really a shit about the villain, but everything else was so strong that I can't, you know, knock it, really. So it's a very, very strong outing.
Because I want it to be better.
Yeah, good luck in 2017. All right, let's talk about The Founder, the McDonald's-based film with Michael Keaton. This was going to be the Oscar hopeful of 2016. Yeah. It got bumped to early 2017.
And it disappeared.
And now we know why. It was speculated that the Weinsteins messed up the release, and that is why this was trampled on, a little scene and not much regard for its content. I personally think Michael Keaton does a good job, if not a spectacular job.
I thought
as
he did
Ray
a really
Kroc.
Good job, but yeah, I mean, I think I know where you're going with this.
A little underwhelmed though with this picture, to be honest.
Well, there's not. I thought they did actually a really good job with the movie, and I did enjoy it, and I did like it. But the story, I guess, it's just not a story that really needed to be told. And but I did like the way that they executed it. I like the way they told it. You know, it really falls in line with any other movie like this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was proficient in all the ways, but proficient and unspectacular is the two kind of descriptive words I could use on this. I would say it's like an HBO film, but it's almost that saying, that's almost like knocking it, but it just didn't need to be told on this level. I'm glad the talent involved, Nick Offerman's dry delivery is well used. Mm-hmm. Keaton, like I said, is nice in this. There's a couple of, you know, Laura Dern's character as the wife is somewhat useless and underwritten, you know, why she's supportive or not supportive or what their problems are.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the whole McDonald's Brothers thing even just disappears after a while, and it becomes like, why is this? I don't know. They should have, this is almost a movie where the true story is interesting, but you really kind of needed to beef that up.
Yeah, no pun intended. And the one of the most interesting aspects I thought of this, it comes at the post-script credit crawl there, where they said the handshake deal that they show you happening, and then they cut away at the end there that Kroc screwed the brothers over. It was worth $100 million a year.
Yeah.
You know, you think, my God, show that. I mean, that's a show don't tell.
Well, they did show that. I mean, I disagree with you. They showed that whole meeting area, and you knew when those brothers looked at each other, you knew that they were thinking, we're fucked. We're never going to see this money. And they did it anyways just to get rid of the guy. I mean, they did show that as far as that goes, but
I like John.
That just
Lee
shows
Hancock.
You there's no end to this movie really, right?
The writer, I mean, they're written by Robert Smigel, I'm sorry, who did The Wrestler. He's done some
Smigel.
Really, yeah. And directed by John Lee Hancock, who's done The Blind Side and The Alamo. No, but he's done some good films. And this needed Barry Levinson. It's a strange request, but Barry Levinson kills these 1950s salesmen. You know, when Keaton's given that monologue in the beginning, I thought, this is going to be a good fucking movie. And within 3 minutes of that, it was falling apart already. I thought, this is going nowhere already.
His character didn't seem to stay on a path that made a lot of sense. He wavered a lot as far as like what he was doing. And like, sometimes he seemed like really smart and he was a go-getter and doing this and that. And other times it seemed like
he was a fucking clown.
Like he didn't know what the hell was going on.
I couldn't tell if he was the buffoon of his office or a fucking genius.
That was my problem.
And I didn't understand why certain people were listening to him and others weren't. So the movie itself, I guess, didn't do a good job in explaining that. Mediocre movie for me.
Well, it may just have been too much like real life, you know. I thought it was an interesting story and worth watching.
All right, here's one that is going to be on my worst of the year list.
Uh-oh.
XXX Return of Xander Cage, which is the second or
That's
third
incredible,
one.
Though. It's Vin Diesel. Isn't he good in everything?
I like what you had texted me one night late as you watched this. I get this text that says, I don't know why I thought XXX was going to be any less ridiculous than the first one. And it's like, why would you expect that? But I at least thought it was going to be as entertaining as the first one and not as dog shit as the second one.
Well,
it proved to be somewhere in the middle of the two.
This movie, I don't know if it proved to be in the middle. I think it proved to be way outside. This thing is just ridiculous, like just stupid ridiculous. And it follows the like Fast and Furious, you know, layout to a T. Like it's just fucking like Fast and Furious, and you're like, God, you took all the terrible things from those Fast and Furious movies and applied it to XXX.
Yeah, what they did is they got an exotic location so that they could play it overseas. They get someone like Donnie Yen and Tony Jaa to make appearances because that plays in Asian markets. You know, they get Roya Ruby in there because, you know, she's this hot, you know, sexually ambiguous person now that gets in the younger edge crowd. Yeah, they got Vin Diesel who's getting in the, you know, 35 plus demographic. It's like, it's such a fucking breakdown of statistics to me that it didn't even seem like a movie. And then when they got to the actual movie, it's just recycled parts that don't go anywhere. Like you said, it starts off as a XXX1 retread with a bad stunt to begin with. And then it goes into some like Fast and Furious shit where they're all in some headquarters and everybody's being assembled. And,
well, honestly, I watched the last Fast and Furious not long after watching this, a couple of weeks afterwards, and I don't even know that in my head, they're both the same movie. Yeah, I can't tell what I'm talking about anymore.
I get blurred too with the next one I want to talk
and
about.
The whole Samuel L. Jackson like part in that, just all of it was just like, oh my God. Like,
I was just glad the soccer kid died. I hate to say that, but I thought if they bring him on as a XXX agent, I am going to stop with this movie. But you know that ends up. So I think we both can agree this is one of the worst of the year so far.
Oh yeah, XXX4. I'm there. I'm watching it.
XXX not for America. It's only for a domestic market.
But yeah, it's a terrible movie. I will never watch it again.
I want to tell you about another movie that is destined to be on my worst of the year list, and that is the big screen adaptation.
What?
Adaptation of the television show Baywatch. This is the Dwayne Johnson, Zac Efron headlining comedy, the R-rated, raunchy, hard R summer, you know, laugh fest that was going to be the big box office hit that is tanking. And you know why it's tanking? Many reasons, not the least of which that is a comedy without comedians in it. It is strangely out of whack tonally. It's all over the fucking place. It's not, it can't decide. The playbook here is 22 Jump Street. You know, we talked about Fast and the Furious being the model for XXX. Obviously, 21 Jump Street's success is the model for Baywatch, and it fails so miserably. You cannot just look at those movies and go, we're going to take that. And, you know, the chemistry will just appear. The chemistry between Efron and Johnson sucks because they both are trying to be goofs and the straight man at the same time. They're both too cool for school, and they both want to be goofy. You know, you can't have it both ways. It's Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum's chemistry in those movies made those movies. That's not something that you really can count on all the time. Baywatch is sorely lacking in most departments. The continuity in this movie is a fucking mess in the first 10 to 15 minutes. When you watch this, notice how many times Efron's sunglasses are on and off in particular scenes, where cups are, where characters' movements are.
That's fantastic. And that's how it used to be, man.
Oh man, this movie could have been released in 97 and it still would have been a flop. Yeah, there's nothing. When this thing starts, man, let me just explain to you when I knew I was in trouble. And it's literally as the beginning starts, because it's the same. You know what's funny is that Paramount, which released both this and XXX, I believe, are using the exact same title card, like the font and everything. So I'm starting and I'm like, oh no, this looks way too familiar here. This doesn't look good. Okay, so Johnson comes out. The beach is, you know, the sun's rising. It's this morning in some unidentified beach. They don't want to tell you that they shot this in Atlanta, Georgia, and not in Georgia. And not in California, where the original show took place. But a windsurfer's out in the ocean, and before he even knows he's in trouble, Johnson just takes off running for a fucking pier, okay? Now the guy jumps off his windsail, and he's flying through the air. Meanwhile, Johnson's still fucking running. He dives into the water. Well, now the guy, before he even knows where he's going to land, Johnson knew 20 minutes ago because he's been running after the fucker. He lands on the rock, splits his head open, but Dwayne Johnson's there, heaving pecs and all to raise him from the water. And behind him, the fucking slogan Baywatch appears. And I was like, oh, man, we are in for a long haul. We're 90 seconds into this movie. And I thought, okay, at least they may have a sense of humor about themselves and try to go campy, but it's not like the bar was very high for them to do anything with this material, and they just did the least amount of work with it. It's bad. Yeah, when you see it, which you eventually will, because everyone is going to be like, oh, I should see it. You know, how bad can it be? You'll see. Don't say I didn't warn you. All right, tell me about Chips. This is another, you know, television to movie adaptation. Adaptation, whatever it may be. Yeah, I'm going to stop saying that word. I'm excited that word.
Chips is an interesting story for me because I originally watched, this is one of the first movies I watched out of all this list. We did, you know, reviews for this time and last time, this and that. And I just thought really nothing of it, you know. It's not as bad as Baywatch, apparently, because it didn't hurt me to watch it, you know. But it didn't
offend you.
It wasn't something that I was really all that paying really a close attention to. And the thing about the difference here, though, I think the issue is that obviously this is much lower budget. But what they do with that budget, especially in the end, it's pretty astounding. I thought, I was like, oh wow, that's actually pretty nice set pieces and action set pieces and things for such a low budget. And it was an okay movie. Then I watched a lot of other shit and I started thinking, man, Chips is pretty fucking good. And it's not, it's really not that great, but just, you know, in the sea of all the shit that had came out around that time that was available at the beginning of the year, like it kind of stands up above the rest. And I really kind of have to give that to, I guess, the inception of the whole thing with Dax Shepard, like coming and I saw a couple talk shows with him being interviewed and talking about this, and he was basically very excited about going in, right, pitching this idea and then getting this movie stuff. And it was almost felt like this Corman-esque like story where he had gone to Roger Corman with this idea to make this into a movie, and Corman said, sure, here's some money, go out and do it yourself. And almost felt like they were operating in like just it was such a small production, and they would just they were just off doing their own thing, and they somehow came out with a movie that, when you think about it, like if they just went off and made this movie and stuff, it's actually fairly impressive and not too bad.
But probably had very little studio interference, is what you're saying, which Baywatch had a lot of notes.
So I don't know. Knowing that and with everything else that I'd seen, everything, I actually say that I really enjoyed it. And it's not that great of a movie. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's not super funny all the time. You know, there's a couple places where you laugh, but I don't know. It's a real basic movie. It's just that with what they had to do and how they got it made and stuff, I just found that interesting because that doesn't happen very often anymore.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with reviews for five more films and the trailer attic part of tonight's show.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Check out the Blueprint Review podcast at blueprintreview.co.uk. This could be interesting because I know we've got some very diverse people. I'm going to be arguing with Darren a lot.
I think it's going to be me v you, Laura, with maybe Laura set in the middle.
To be honest, I think it's about expectation. Yeah. Like, I think...
Yeah, I expected it to
Oh, we should have English accents.
Speak English already, you fucks. All right, I'm sorry. To all of our English-speaking listeners.
Have you seen?
They're with the rest of our audience. So there we have my review now of Alien Covenant, the eighth film, I believe, in the franchise. Maybe the overall, really, the officially.
Do you count Alien vs. Predator movies?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really try to count any of those. And, you know, I've come to a strange realization with this Alien Covenant, which to me is, this is Prometheus 2, Alien 5 in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I really don't like Alien movies,
Alien
I guess.
6, right?
I told you this off air, and I'm going to reiterate it again. This is basically Deepwater Horizon meets Alien. It's blue-collar workers getting picked off one by one by this fucking, you know, mysterious evil entity that they don't want to deal with, that they're forced to deal with by a corporate mandate. Mm-hmm. And I'm just tired of this. This is such the same story. These, you know, these travelers on this deep space mission that are going to go colonize somewhere are forced to land on this terrarium, if you will, and David's living down there from Prometheus, and he, you know, it's all a big bait and switch so that he can, you know, get bored the fucking mothership. And then is it really him, or is it the new version of David that boarded the mothership to get away? Ooh, all of that. And the saddest part about this is that Ridley Scott, it's such a ho-hum affair that you start thinking things like, man, Ridley Scott's just ripping himself off here. It's sad to see a director at this point, especially someone of his stature and his age at 79, to take the time to go back and revisit these movies with so little, you know, nothing new to bring to the material. Mm-hmm. I think they've done enough. What I'm saying is they stretched this material as far as it can go. I know you like Prometheus a lot more than I did, but I did like Prometheus in a lot of ways, and you loved it, I'd say.
You know, I love movies like this. I mean, a lot of the stuff you just said to me makes me want to watch this.
I know you do.
Shitty sci-fi movies with spaceships where they show up and just happens. And it might be a terrible movie. I'm not going to disagree with that. You know, it might be bad, but I will probably still like it regardless.
When you watch this, I want you to tell me, because Prometheus at least brought something new. As much as I didn't like the directions it finally went, it brought something new. But what new is going on here? Like, what are they doing here that's new besides just rehashing what we kind of more explain? It's almost like when 2010 came out after 2001, and they just went back and explained to you what you had seen previously in a lot of ways, which made it less interesting each time out. And what's happening to me is that the mystery of the initial alien contact in Alien and even in Prometheus now is getting less interesting the more I find out about what the fuck it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So that's my overall complaint with these movies. It kind of takes me out of it. And I just didn't find not one of these characters likable, sympathetic, or interesting. First time ever in any of these movies. So usually I can find one of these guys. Even Danny McBride's guy. I just kept thinking, why is Danny McBride in this movie? You know? Like, shouldn't you be off making your Halloween movie? Why are you in this?
I'll have to watch this still.
Of course you will.
I have to. It's an alien movie. I do like it.
Tell me about Rings. What about that reboot? What's going on with this?
Well, I'll sum this up for you pretty easily. Don't watch it. It's not good. It's just a stupid little horror movie in the vein of all that Japanese horror shit that we got from before, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah, The Grudge, Grudge 2, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's really just no different than you know, any of that. But it's not as good, obviously, as The First Ring.
The First Ring was great.
By far.
Even The Second Ring was okay.
Mm-hmm. This one tries to do too much with the universe and story. I don't know. They set up... It's a neat idea, but that's really all this movie is a neat idea, you know, where you have... They basically have a group of people, and this professor of this college has discovered the tape. And so they have these... so everyone, people watch the tape and stuff. He's doing like a experiment, I guess, is what he says. Yeah. And he makes... And so someone watches the tape. But of course, if, you know, if you pass the tape along, then she doesn't come kill you, right? So they have these... what they call tails, and that's someone that's going to come and watch the tape afterwards. So you can experience that 7 days or 5 days or whatever leading up to that as, you know, she's doing weird things to you and, like, you know, trying to tell you that she's coming.
That is a neat
idea.
But
then you get out of it in the end because it passes on to someone else. And so you just go in a circle like that, similar to that. So it's like, oh, that's a neat idea. But it doesn't expand into anything. You know, it's just the same basic ring shit and nothing... well, I won't say that. Something big does happen, but it's fucking ridiculous where they take it from there.
Well, I'm going to
I don't want to ruin it. If anybody winds up watching it, I won't ruin it, but it has a stupid twist in it that I thought
I'm not a
dumb.
Horror fan, and I only really watch these unless you recommend them to me. And typically when you recommend them, like The Conjuring and things like that, they are good. So I'll stay away from this one. What about briefly, let's talk about The Bye Bye Man, which was the STX release that came out in
another one.
Made a little bit of money, but
I would really stay away from. This one's real low rent, terrible. The opening scene on this is fucking awesome. And it makes you think, holy shit, what is yet to come from this movie, right? It's not some kind of huge big opening sequence, but it's just a real simple thing where a guy drives in it takes place in like the 70s. Or this opening does. A guy pulls into a driveway and gets out with a gun. He's like, who did you tell this and that? He's talking to these women and stuff, and he takes them into the house, you know, and he kills them. And they say, like, oh, we told this person. And then he goes outside, and there they are, and he chases them down to their house. And shoots. It's like the bye-bye man's coming and this and that and all this shit. And you're like, oh, my God, this is like some crazy, like, 90s or 80s
a good horror shit.
Horror shit. And it's actually like, oh my God, like what is happening? Like, what is the Bible?
Well,
man? What's going to happen?
Have violence in it besides horror violence. Like,
yes.
Actual, like,
this was
violence.
True violence. Like man violence. And you thought, oh my God, like what is this? And then the Bye-Bye Man does show up in this movie and they do all that shit. And you just think, what the fuck? You know?
Yeah.
Really? What a letdown. And the Bye-Bye Man is a giant weenie who just fucking doesn't do anything. It has nothing to do with the movie. It really is just...
Out of this
standard
and the
shit.
Rings, which one out of the two? What's the better of the two?
I would say The Rings is more interesting than The Bye-Bye Man. Because The Bye-Bye Man doesn't... After that first scene where you're like, holy shit. After that, it's just fucking dumb. Like, The Rings at least has the whole thing where you discover, like, about the tales. And they go through all that shit and they try to explain everything. Bye-Bye Man doesn't have any of that, you know? I mean, he does go to the library, right, and research the Bye-Bye Man.
Yeah, well, those are all perfunctory
scenes. Not, yeah,
you know those are coming.
It's just a weak movie.
Well, I'm glad you spent 3 hours watching this, so I don't have to. Thank you for the sake of our show. Appreciate that. Let me tell you one to stay away from, and let me save you about an hour and a half, an hour and 40 minutes. That is another one that will be gracing my 2017 worst of list. This is now the third movie on today's show that will be on my top 10 list, I guarantee you, by year's end. This is The Great Wall. Matt Damon's he's in it, but it's not from here, right?
He's in it to win it?
He's always in it to win it. My boy Damon is in there kicking ass, as always.
Yeah, it's a half Chinese movie, right? Universal and some...
And Legendary Pictures and some sort of Chinese investors.
Chinese guys.
Directed by a very, very famous director over there in China, who is well known for his Spielberg type films and big sweeping historical epic. This was a movie that
he's the director of Hero for anyone,
right?
And House of Flying Daggers, which is a fantastic movie.
Both great movies. This has the look of those movies in the sense of that beautiful, kind of colorful samurai era Japanese army, you know, the yellows and the reds and beautiful, but it's mixed with this really shitty horror film or kind of monster movie. And it takes all the steps of that. You know, everything in this movie, you know, is coming. I mean, you're just waiting for the next, you go, okay, then what? Yeah, well, then this part happens. Yep, then this part happens. Oh, and they catch one. Oh, and they realize they can do this. Oh, and then they're really this. And the times that someone goes, they're smarter than we thought. Well, stop underestimating these goddamn things.
Yeah, so you got to hate like when they just have that kind of dialogue in there thrown in.
Yeah, and it just then it wraps up and it's all for naught. And you just think this whole thing was a big – and the special effects sometimes are well done. The creature design, you go, okay, I haven't seen them with the eyes on the shoulder blades before, or, you know, and kind of the big mouth that's slanted, you know, like a vagina shaped mouth, if you will, in the front and eyes on the
it's like
back
Star
shoulders.
Trek where the testicles are on the knees.
Yeah, basically. And so it's kind of this weird movie that is, it's foreign, but it wants to be Hollywood, but yet it doesn't really feel. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel domestic at all. Other than structure, it's structured like a normal Hollywood film with, you know, the usual setups and payoffs, which actually is a kind of a bummer because some of those other movies that you mentioned have that foreign structure where, you know, they aren't they're predecessor to 24 minute to have this happen, an hour and have this happen, at 90 minutes have the tie up and the twist. It has its own kind of structure and flow. Mm-hmm. This stays on the narrative structure of regular Hollywood formula.
Well, if you look at, an interesting thing I thought about this movie when it came out, and I haven't seen this, so you did comment on how there's a horror movie in here that's a little blander, I guess, or so to say. But if you look at the poster of this movie compared to the poster of any of the other movies that this guy's directed, this poster is like gray and dingy looking, and those other posters are like bright
vibrant.
And beautiful, right? Is
yeah,
that kind of how this movie is?
No, the movie is actually somewhat vibrant. Well, it's weird. The Asian stuff, they're impeccably clean and very well put together. And it all looks like Hero. And like what you said, like it's almost picture perfect. It looks like something that like The Last Emperor, you know, Bernard Baducci movie could have done. So it's a bigger world. I don't know. It's almost like this guy was just trying to make a Spielberg movie. And went against his the Damon character is always dirty and dingy, and when he's on screen at times it looks like shit, and other times it's a gorgeous looking film. It's a really strange movie, but it's terrible. Don't watch it. Don't watch it. Save yourself some time.
I will watch
it. I know you will.
At some point.
Here's a movie that I'll never watch, but I do kind of want to know how it is. It's The Boss Baby. What's up with this? How did this make $175 million?
Yeah, this movie's really not that good.
What's the deal, though?
How do I don't even know why people would watch this. I don't know. I don't get it. I didn't find it funny. I found it really boring for the most part. And really not a lot happens in it, you know?
Is it because Alec Baldwin's having a moment? Is that what's going on? Is this like anything he touches right now is funny?
That's possible. Yeah, I guess. I mean, this movie's not funny, though, is the thing. I didn't find it. It's not even believable, right? It's one of those DreamWorks movies that's really weird. That clearly takes place in a universe, you know, a cartoon universe, I guess, obviously, because...
Yeah, the fucking baby's wearing a suit.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way that babies and dogs and, like, all this stuff works doesn't make any sense. So, I don't know. There's really not much to say. If you like this kind of stuff, every once in a while you see, like, a lesser thing. It's weird to say because this is DreamWorks. It shouldn't be a lesser one, but it really is, but... This is more in line with like a Despicable Me type thing, but much worse than that. I like Despicable Me. I just didn't find any of the characters in this really. There's just nothing in this to take away that's like, oh, that was a nice moment, or that was cool looking, or anything that you would find in like a Pixar movie pretty easily, right? Even if you didn't like the Pixar movie.
What I'm hearing
at some point say it looks good, right?
It's pretty forgettable is what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah. Yeah, let's end that review.
Here's another one I have a feeling you're going to tell me is pretty forgettable. The Space Between Us, which I forgot even came out. This was that Lionsgate film that was based on a young adult novel that was bumped around the schedule and came and died. Britt Robertson, and I can't remember that kid's name, the kid from Ender's Game. How was it?
Yeah, so this was a letdown for me.
Really, you expected much from this?
Well, I like the cast. I like the idea of it. So yeah, I thought, oh, well, this could be, I mean, other people would probably not like it, but then maybe it would be for me and I would like it because I like these young adult type things. But this movie really just has a weird flow to it. And like the Britt Robertson character is just like a terrible rendition of like a girl. Like she's just not, she's just stupid sometimes. And then she's kind of mean. And then it just for no reason, you're like, why? You know, like, I don't like you at all.
Why are you being so mean?
Yeah. Like, why is this happening? And the Asa Butterfield kid is just so gangly and weird. And there's of course a twist in this that is just so like, oh God, like family friendly type, you know. It's just, you know, the heart of the matter of what the trailer said this was about is not really in this movie. And what is in this movie from that is, I don't know, weird. Like they, like, I don't know, like they have, like the, him and the girl have sex in it, right? They just sleep together and you're like, what? And like a second ago, she's like, she's a totally fucked up person, like for real. Like, I don't know. I don't even know how to explain it. Just, well, just don't even bother.
Trevor's issues are coming out in this review here with this, and then she has sex with him. She's a terrible person.
No, because it's the way, like, she's supposed to be a young girl, right? They're supposed to be like kids and stuff, and they're not, and they're, it's the way it's done, you know. It's like she just met this kid. She's just doing all this stuff, and she's just like, at one point she's saying like she doesn't like him, this and that, but I'm supposed to believe that she's somehow in love with him and things, but they do a real poor job of doing that, so she just sleeps with him. So it's like she's a whore, you know, is what it comes off like.
This movie sounds fucking terrible.
So it's just like not, yeah, it's not executed well at all.
All right, what's up with the disappointment room?
It's a disappointment.
Yeah, there's the easy one.
This is a movie that's really fucking bad. I mean, you want to see a movie that just has no point and it's just fucking lost on itself? Watch The Disappointment Room. I mean, holy shit, does this movie have whole sequences that just have nothing to do with anything?
Wasn't this one of the last Relativity releases too? Like one of the last bombs they had?
I don't know. Was this a Relativity release?
I want to say this was one of the Kavanaugh deals.
I mean, it's something else. It's really just, I couldn't imagine reading the script and thinking this would be something anyone would want to do. It would just have to be nothing. I don't know. Just, I wouldn't watch it. Yeah, it's not suspenseful, not scary. Nothing.
The uniquely titled, I don't feel at home in this world anymore. What are you watching?
This movie?
Is that like Judy Blume?
Yeah, right. No, this is a Netflix original, and I put that in quotes because I think they just bought it. Actually, I'm pretty certain they just bought this, right? The stars, I guess Elijah Wood is in it, but it has Melanie Lynskey in it. I don't know if you know who that is, but she's in a bunch of other things, and when you see her, you'd recognize her. And she's really good in this. And so is Elijah Wood, really. And the movie's really odd, really weird, and very good, surprisingly good. Very violent, and violent in a way that, like, hits, that kind of hits you. And you're like, oh, my God, like people are dying and shit, you know? And suspenseful in that way, too. And also funny, you know, and slightly touching here and there.
This is available on Netflix right now?
This is on Netflix, right? She, people come and rob her house. And so she goes, basically, she gets fed up with this kind of shit. Like, all this shit's happening to her, and someone robs her house. She goes to take care of it. It's really a long story to, I can't, like, Elijah Wood's, like, one of her neighbors that she runs into, and they start palling around, and he's weird. You really just have to watch it. If you like weird indie movies that are kind of dark comedy stuff, then you would probably like this.
I do like that, but it's also, that's a tricky minefield to navigate typically for filmmakers, and we'll talk about that in the trailer section of the show, because I think that one of those is going to be a minefield that could be great or a disaster. And it sounds like this movie did a good job, though, of being on the good side. Some of these, you know what, when you're talking about it, I know I haven't seen this movie, but it reminded me of Henry Poole. What's Wrong with Henry Poole?
Or? Yeah, it's right.
What was that one with Luke Wilson in it when he saw the outline of Jesus in the water spray on his house?
I mean, it is similar to that in the sense of that it's just fucking weird and out there, but it pulls you in regardless of that, and it's just kind of like warm and inviting, you know, even though this movie's way, way darker than that and obviously far more violent. But it just works. I don't know what to say about it other than
Elijah Wood's doing a lot of interesting work in this last decade. He's done really low budget. I recommended Grand Piano, the Damien Chavazelli. Can't say that kid's name. Right. From La La Land, which was on Netflix, written, directed film he did. And I liked him in The Trust, which wasn't a good movie, but he was good in that with Nicolas Cage. And now you're talking about another one. He has no problem taking the back kind of co-starring role, but stealing scenes quietly as well.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And he does that in this movie as well.
All right, let's do some streaming online picks for this week. What have you been up to on the streaming front? What can you recommend?
Because I feel so bad about talking about Britt Robertson there, and I do love her.
I love her too.
I'm going to say Girl Boss because it actually is a really good show. It's Netflix, original show on Netflix. True-ish story about a girl that is going nowhere in life, but finds out that she's really good at turning clothes. She buys, you know, used clothes and sells them on eBay for a lot of money, and starts this basically a fashion empire and stuff. And it's as girly as that sounds, it's not a girly show at all.
Yeah, I was turned off because of the title. Maybe I'll give it a shot now. I've been watching. This isn't really fair because it's on YouTube, so anyone, it's not really, I guess it is streaming, but it's not on one of the major picks. But on YouTube, you can see in its entirety, this is the full 89 episodes stretched over 7 seasons, I believe, of Dr. Katz. Do you recall Dr. Katz?
I do, and I couldn't believe that you put this on here when I saw that. I was like, is that really Dr. Katz he's talking
it's
about?
It's the Dr. Katz, man. Go back.
Fall back into it, huh?
I've watched the first season now, and I'm just amazed at how many top-level comedians are on. It's basically, you know, crudely animated. And if you remember I have a soft spot for that early 90s Comedy Central lineup. And a lot of these these episodes have the commercial breaks intact. So you see the lineups like Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, oh, goodness, the A-list coming up and Talk Shoe and Daily Soup. You know, like kind of Talk Shoe. Good God. But, you know, the soup and things like that. So I love this show. I love the comedians on it. I love the whole shtick they're doing and they animate it. And it's like, oh, my God, it's Ray Romano. It's Dave Attell. That's Joy Bayer there. It's all these random fucking people that make an appearance. And it's Archer, who is the voice of the son Ben, which I never realized. Mm-hmm. His lazy stay-at-home son, who's always trying to get out of the house. Highly recommend this.
John Benjamin.
John H. Benjamin. So yeah,
he's a good guy. I like his voice.
Do you ever like Dr. Katz? Did you watch, big fan of this back in the day?
Yeah, I saw a little bit of it.
Fucking love this show. I don't know why. It just reminded me of just the glory days of the 90s right. Cable television, you know?
I know. Whenever I see it or come across it, I do. It does feel like, oh, yeah.
You go, oh, that's the original Comedy Central logo. I forgot it was
Dr.
used to look
Katz.
Like that. Remember the original Comedy Central logo with the building? The Empire Building?
Yes.
Yep, see?
Oh, yeah, they don't have that anymore, huh?
Oh, they quietly made it away with that years ago. And we didn't even notice.
Nor did we care.
Where's the cat? Is he around here somewhere? We doing Trailer Addicts?
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
All right.
Permission to come aboard?
Let's do it.
Thank you.
Set phasers to stun.
All right, were you stunned by Tom Cruise's latest trailer, the Doug Liman directed film?
Always stunned by Tom Cruise.
American Made. I like this trailer.
Especially when he has the longish hair now. Oh, God.
He's back to the. I think this movie looks fun. I want to see this.
I think this looks pretty basic, and it's going to be another big failure for him, unfortunately. I think that he needs to start doing a little something different. I don't know. This looks like Lord of War, and quite frankly, Lord of War looks like a much better movie than this.
I will concede those 2 points to you, but I also argue with you and say this looks like Cruise getting back on the right track and trying to make movies that maybe have some sort of validity.
But I don't think this is enough mass appeal, you know. And we've kind of already been here, done that, and these types of movies are hit and miss, you know. And we're kind of on a on the ebb of a downward slope here with these types of movies. We've already hit our high. You know, we had Wolf of Wall Street. We had
you had Blow. You've had all those movies.
Yeah,
you know?
but you know what I mean. Like, it's on a kind of like those types of movies are like kind of on a downward turn right now. So for him to make one that's just going to be on par, you know, at its best, I don't know.
At least it's not another franchise. That's all I can say.
Yeah, but this doesn't clearly have the international success that something like The Mummy's going to have. So
where does it leave him?
He's going to be in a lot of trouble. Yeah.
If it's not good, but you never know. It could be good. You know,
it maybe could be the fantastic. That's like true. Shit.
But I thought the trailer was at least decent enough that it made me interested in it. But the, you know, the whole scene where he's talking about, the courthouse.
But couldn't you just...
It's like a Jack Reacher all again, where I'm going to be out of here in 10 seconds when that phone
yes,
rings.
Yes, right? Oh, but that's God. In fucking Lord of War too. And tell me that this isn't interchangeable, that Nicolas Cage couldn't just play this role.
Oh, I wish.
I don't know.
He can't grow the hair, though.
I don't know. That's not important at this point. They put a wig on him. I just don't see the point of, like, this doesn't feel like a real Tom Cruise movie to me. I don't know.
Well, the accent, I was a little surprised at how awful the accent was in the trailer.
Yeah, because well, it may be good, but on him, it sounds...
It just sounded
it sounds
so peculiar.
Fake, right?
Yeah, because he's never really done it before. Even in Valkyrie, he just said, fuck it, I'm not doing the German accent. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was the big to-do then. But I agree with that choice, because it was jarring in this trailer.
All right.
All right, let's talk about Logan Lucky, Steven Soderbergh's return to heist films and filmmaking specifically. So
just back to Soderbergh films, right?
And this looks like a Soderbergh film.
Does it not? I mean, to a T, right? Like, this is like, you watch this trailer and you think, oh, yeah, Steven Soderbergh, including the cast members.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's the Steven Soderbergh, you know, revolving acting troupe.
I don't understand the title.
Neither do I.
Do you get that? I also don't know about the Daniel Craig choice here.
Don't understand
is
why
that
he's...
too weird, or why is he like that in this movie? Just for shits and giggles?
Well, you said it's a Steven Soderbergh movie all around. It felt like Guy Ritchie was heavily influenced in this somewhere.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
You know, I was like, whoa, what's happening here? This, you know what this looks like to me in what Soderbergh does a lot for the better? Often, but sometimes really for the worse, is that he takes a story that would be very, you know, streamlined and narrative, mm-hmm. and takes it and just fucking over manipulates it and overshapes it and plays with it too much. And you mean like Haywire is a good example. That was a movie that could have been something that turned into like this really convoluted nothing.
This
but then
trailer.
You have something like Side Effects, which is nothing that he adds so much to. So where do you end up, you know?
I know. This trailer does feel like too much, though. I mean, it starts off with just these two guys, these two brothers, right? And then throughout this trailer, you actually learn about these people. And then you learn that that they're trying to do a heist. And then you see, like, then you meet Daniel Craig, and it's like, oh, what the fuck is going on? And then
I was already exhausted
then you
by
learn
the
about,
trailer.
Yeah, and then you learn about the brother, and he's got some fucked up shit going on, too. And, you know, there's a one-armed thing, so there's one-armed jokes. And then fucking, and then they do, it's the fucking racing shit, so you get, like, there's a race going on, and then people are blown things up to get into the, it's like, holy shit.
Well, it's cut, you know, that trailer is cut like an old school trailer, like a 1970s type trailer in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. where there was a lot of like story building in the trailer instead of just shot selection and, you know, hype moments.
Well, I don't know. They seem to do that now, trailers nowadays, right? I mean, don't they give away pretty much everything?
Visually, yeah, that's for sure. The money shots. Even things that aren't in it, like Rogue One.
Well, shit, they tell you what's basically going to happen in the trailer.
This is another movie like American Made where I'm interested in it, but that's really because the goodwill of the cast and filmmakers behind it, not necessarily what I've seen so far. So we got Battle of the Sexes Steve Carell and – or Steve Carell and Emma Stone. Based in the real life
– Carell. It's better.
Real life event here, Billie Jean King and – you know, the Riggs guy there playing one another in a game of tennis, match of tennis. What do you think of this trailer? Is this The Big Short all over again?
Yeah, I'm really getting tired of Steve Carell here doing this type of stuff because it just feels like...
It's amusing at first,
though. I'm such an actor, you know? Like, this is basically Brad Pitt and War Machine all over again, right? He just keeps doing this and he keeps picking roles where he can speak in weird voices, but he's a serious character. It's like, dude, come on, like... Fucking be Steve Carell again for just a little bit because it's bumming me out a little bit. That being said, I don't know why anyone felt this was a movie that needed to be made.
Well, we talked about The Founder being an HBO film. This is legitimately should have been an HBO film.
And what a cast to have. Again, just like The Founder had a great cast. Here's another great cast. And I think, you know, what? It's so weird. Like, yeah, it was an event. Yeah, you know, Bobby Riggs is a fucking character for sure. And he's a real asshole. And so that's fun. But I don't know. I just don't care, right? This doesn't seem like an event that needs to be cinematized.
It just looks like it's on a too big of a scale, and I can't imagine this is going to be a box office success of any level.
Yeah, had this been a made-for-TV movie, right, or a Lifetime movie or something like that, it's perfect for that.
Yeah, if this showed up in my Netflix account, I'd ideally watch this. All right, let's talk about The Dark Tower, the much-anticipated Stephen King novel turned into film,
novel again. Well, it'll be turned back into a stage play and then a musical, right? That's what they're doing nowadays, all these, right?
As much as I want to see this, I don't really know what I'm looking at here.
I never read the Dark Tower stuff, so I have no idea. I'm coming in completely,
coming in cold. I read one of the novels.
This whole thing. And yeah, I couldn't believe, first of all, how old this was, and then watching this trailer and thinking, God, this feels very fresh. You know, Stephen King, even his older stuff, this could have been written yesterday. Like, this fits into the narratives of everything. Yeah. This looks like an idea that someone had literally like a week ago, you know, as far as like all the other movies that we've been seeing coming out and stuff. So it fits into the lineup, I would say, pretty well. But doesn't it feel a little too basic, a little too big of an event for such a basic storyline?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not moved by this at all. Not anything about this. I'm not moved by the guy who's the ultimate ass kicker. I'm over a lot of these tropes that I saw.
Yeah, it just feels like bad guy, good guy movie, right?
Mm-hmm. Big movie, spectacular, slow motion action scenes, Warner Brothers, watch this shit, buy a ticket.
Yeah, and whoever decided he should load his guns like that, that better be in the book. Because if they put that in there in the fucking movie without that being in the book, then, oh my God, because that's terrible.
I don't recall it being in the book, but it was a long time ago, and I didn't make it through the whole series, so I can't recall that. I'd recall the characters.
Stephen King does do magical things like that in some of the books. Or not in these books, but in other books where things, magical things happen, you know? And so if he could have written it, some sense that the guy could load his gun magically, but the way they did it was just so cheesy, right? That's like something you'd see in like RIPD or something.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. RIPD. Jesus. Okay. Next we have The Kingsman, The Golden Circle, the follow-up to the massively successful and very entertaining Kingsman, you know, the Secret Service movie from a couple years ago. This trailer is awesome too. I want to see the sequel. How are they doing this? But this franchise is not only fun, but fucking awesome. I'm with this trailer all the way.
Yeah, I like the trailer too, but I felt like a little bit, I don't know, I guess I felt like kind of like the John Wick thing with this a little bit. Like I've kind of been here, done that with this, but in such a way that like, how are they going to one up? Like, I wonder, is this movie going to be able to be better? Or maybe what have they done instead is just piled more action into it.
Which is what they did John Wick 2. They overstuffed that some bitch. So
I'm just worried about that. But it does look really good. And I love the first one so much that you got to just give it a chance.
And the soundtrack. I mean, it's another movie where they spent bread on the soundtrack. And I love the last movie I can think of that they did that was Suicide Squad. That they spent real money on like an actual soundtrack that was in the film. And not just, you know, with the latest hit they were trying to push on an album. So I love the fact they did it in the first one. I hope they did that in this one as well. It really adds to the experience for me.
Yeah, I like the movie albums. I would say bring that back.
Next, we have American Assassins. This is going to be really, I think, a launching vehicle for the kid from Maze Runner. I can't think of his name. Right, Dylan O'Brien, who had the horrific accident where he shattered his face, you know, in the last film. And so been out of action for a while. But I do like this kid. In this movie, this trailer especially, well cast. I mean, I think this kid's got the chops. He reminds me of as a Cruise type kid. You know, I think this kid actually might grow into being a pretty sturdy screen idol.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree with you on all that stuff. I love the cast. I think it's a very strong cast. I like the idea of the movie, although I think this is going to be super minor and probably not, I don't know. This has a shot at being not very good at all.
Oh, of course. Especially if you're watching the trailer. But I, as something like Abduction was, you know, if you look at the two properties.
No. And, or, you know, something, it's not as if Michael Mann's directing this, right?
Right. Yeah, it's not Black Hat.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, although it's along the similar lines, so I have fears that, and the trailer does seem very overly complicated. But I agree with you. I think that this is the type of movie where this cat, like Taylor Kitsch, Dylan O'Brien, Michael Keaton, right? Scott Adkins is in here. This is the right kind of movie for these guys.
Yeah, it reminded me of Criminal, which was that low-key Kevin Costner, Ryan Reynolds was in it for a blink of an eye. Film from last year, which I quite liked. Low-key kind of espionage, international espionage type thriller.
Yeah, this is something, I don't know, is this coming out in theaters then? This feels like something that if it had been made 10 years ago would have been
Lionsgate release.
Yeah, straight to video market, which doesn't really exist anymore.
But do you agree with me on this kid? Do you feel like he might have the chops?
I do like Dylan O'Brien. I know, yeah. I do agree with you on that. I just like his overall look, really, in general. He just seems like such a... He's one of those characters, I guess presence, as you say, that you just kind of like you gravitate towards and like, oh yeah, like that's a good guy right there.
Do you know what it reminds me of is the clean cut all American character that Cruise perfected all those years.
Yeah, he could tap very into that. Similar to that. You know,
all American is all I can say. The kind of like Johnny College type 1950s type deal.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, the last trailer we'll talk about tonight is The Bad Batch. This is an Annapurna release, and I got to say, this trailer is art in a lot of ways. This is a beautiful – I don't know about this movie, but this fucking trailer should be watched and dissected. It might be more
entertaining. Figure out what the movie is about.
No, but I want to see it just based on this beautiful fucking trailer.
Yeah, I mean, I think these types of movies that take place in you know, post-apocalyptic deserts and things like that, like I guess like Mad Max movies, but there's a lot of other ones that are really weird. This hits it right on the head. Like this is exactly what those movies are like, man. It's just weird, right? It's just like a weird
concern
world.
Though is that this might turn into like Southland Tales, you know, and turn into
Look at the cast and look who's playing what. I agree with you,
like absolutely, like makes no
Jason
sense.
Jason Momoa gets to play a crazy guy, Keanu Reeves, right? Jim Carrey, I mean, yeah.
But at the same time, Momoa looks fantastic in this movie. I mean, Jesus Christ, it's like why has he not appeared like in that exact outfit in that exact role as a villain in other movies? But like I said, I kept watching this and going, oh man, this is like some Southland Tales type. But I like that movie too for that reason.
Yeah, I'll agree with you as well on that. I did like that, even though it's not good and it is terrible and it fails completely.
But it's an interesting flaw.
But it is interesting, yeah. And so if this movie does attempt, which I don't think it'll attempt the same thing that obviously did, but it does look beautiful. It looks interesting, I guess. I don't know. What else would you say? I never saw this other A Girl Walks Home Alone. Did you see this?
No, I didn't watch that, but it makes me want to go back and look at it.
Yeah, it did because, make me interested in that.
The visuals in this are so strong. This is cut like a music video. When you watch this, it has a very particular rhythm, and it starts, it throws you off.
Coloring,
from the
jump. Too.
Yeah.
It does look like a very saturated in spots, like 90s music video.
Out of all the trailers on today's show, I would say this is the most striking one out of all of them. So the Bad Batch trailer number one, check it out on YouTube or wherever else is out there. Well, that's going to wrap up today's show. We gave you a lot of information on a varied amount of movies here. We talked about, 15 movies, 8 trailers, and a bunch of bullshit. So I want to thank you all for staying with us through this hour. We promise to be back with you more frequently now that we're back on schedule for the summer. And we'll be giving you another retro show, and then we'll be changing up our format just a little bit and adding a lot of things to our YouTube channel. So stay and check out that as well. As always, we want to thank you guys for continually listening to us over there on TalkShoe, Stitcher, iTunes, wherever else you may be getting this show. Also, check out MovieMavericks.com for the latest reviews of most of the movies we've talked about on today's show. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!